When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Tune to a boxing ring near you, Brett Favre versus Mark Gastineau, maybe? Maybe not. Not sure I'd want to watch it anyway. Mark Gastineau, the former Sack King, made some headlines. It's coming out this week as a part of this documentary, this 30 for 30 called the Sack. It was at the Sack Exchange, the New York Sack Exchange, which talks about Michael Strahan's breaking the sack record, 22.5 sacks in a single season. Apparently in 2023, Gastineau approached Favre, confronted him, and said that he took a dive. That basically he took a dive for so that Michael Strahan could break the sack record, which was 22.5 sacks. Gastineau said it cost him because he is not in the Hall of Fame as of right now. He held the record for, and what was it? It was 19 sacks he held on it, 22 sacks, which he set in 1984. And he thinks that it caused him to not be in the Hall of Fame and that all this money that he would get at shows and all that stuff. Okay, you've heard it by now. Josh, do we have the clip of the confrontation?
We do.
Okay, let's play that. Sorry, I should have given you a little more time there.
All good. Hang on. Just battling some audio issues here.
That's okay. So, all right. Well, you just...
I saw you.
Right.
How you doing?
When you fell down for him. I'm going to get my sack back. I'm going to get my sack back, dude.
You probably would hurt me.
Well, I don't care. You hurt me. You hurt me. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You really hurt me. You hurt me, Brett.
We got to get back to this, Brett. I'm sorry.
So then PR guy comes in and says we got to get back to this. This is sad to me for a lot of reasons, one of which is that clearly this has bothered Mark Gastineau to the point that he was going to tell him this whenever he had the chance, which was at this show. Favre doesn't seem in the least bit, he's not denying it in the moment, if you notice that. In fact, it sounds like Favre thinks maybe this is a joke to start. So Brett Favre takes to X this week and says, I want to clear the air on the footage released with Gastineau. In 2002, when Michael Strahan sacked me at the end of the game that he had wrapped up, I was in no way trying to hurt Mark Gastineau. I was trying to close out a game and squeeze that last bit of fun out for a hard-fought game. I booted out of a run thinking it would be wide open, saw Strahan standing there and ducked down. Game was over. There was no need for me to do anything spectacular. It probably wasn't Michael's best sack or tackle for loss. In a different game or situation, I would have made a bigger effort to avoid this sack or tackle for loss. But at no point was I thinking about hurting Gastineau. Maybe it crossed my mind to help Strahan. I didn't think it through. That wasn't my forte at the time, which I would argue has never been his forte. I just wanted to, you know, I see now how being the sack king would elevate his value at card show, strengthen the case for the Hall of Fame, increase his demand as a public speaker. I had no way of knowing that then. Okay, so Brett Favre, and I agree with him, there's no way he could have known what this was going to turn into. I think it's sad in a way that Gastineau is still hanging on to this. However, I really have a very difficult time on believing Brett Favre or anything that Brett Favre ever says. Okay? Do I think in another that he wasn't taking it as hard as he could? Probably. Maybe it crossed my mind to help Strahan. Malarkey. It 100% crossed your mind to help Michael Strahan, who, by the way, didn't play in the first three games of that season. So he did that, by the way, in a shortened time, which was incredible. I don't believe Brett Favre didn't mean to do that. I think he did. I do believe that he didn't mean to hurt Mark Gastineau. I do think it's time for Mark Gastineau maybe to let it go and move on. Pete, your thoughts?
Well, I totally agree with you, Dave, as far as he's got to move on. And you know, it's sad. You feel bad for Gastineau, the fact that he has held on to this for so long. And in some ways, I guess I kind of understand that. But I think that the reality is he's got to let go. And Brett Favre, to your point, Dave, I mean, did he know what he was doing? I 100% think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was kind of offering this whole thing up. I remember that. I actually remember that sack. And it was it was one of those where you're looking at it and go, well, what was that? Even at the time, I remember people saying, you know, this gives.
Oh, yeah, I remember talking about it at the time.
Yeah, all of a sudden Strahan gets this record. By the way, I'm not a big fan of Strahan, so if I say something negative, just understand that. But I'll tell you what, the guys that I know who played at that era and know Gastineau, he's just a different bird. And he's, unfortunately, you know, as time has gone by now, this is one of those things where he's got to let go of it. He won't. This is just going to be who he is. And I think, unfortunately, I think he's one of the guys who probably has, you know, some injuries in his head to some degree.
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
It's just sad. Yeah. It's sad, and it's too bad that he's got to hang on to this whole thing. But at the same time, Dave, you can see his side of this too. I mean,
absolutely I can.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know that I really like the idea of somebody doing something like that as a favor to somebody else and giving him a sack and all the rest of it. So I get that, and I understand it completely. But I think Gastineau has to give it up. And it's really too bad. It's part of the NFL. It's why they do the CTE scans. It's why they do a lot of different things. I don't know what the situation is with Gastineau, but certainly you would think that this is something that he could and should get past, and he's not able to.
I don't know that this is holding him out of the Hall of Fame or held him out of the Hall of Fame. I mean, if you look at his seasons, he had double-digit sacks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 19 one year, 22 the next, then dropped to 13, and then clearly he didn't play as much in those last 3 or 4 seasons. I'm with you. I agree with Gastineau, and it's so easy to hate Brett Favre because he, especially in Minnesota, right? I mean, you love him or hate him. He's a very polarizing figure everywhere, and there's so much more going around this about Favre that we're not going to get to. But I do think that I think in the moment I remember thinking, "Oh my gosh, you can't do that! You can't do that!"
Yeah.
In the moment when he let Strahan hit, you know, let Strahan sack him. But you know, I do think that this is so interesting that it's coming back now. That at this point, when it's so far past, and in the moment, that's the other interesting thing. And to your point, Pete, I do wonder about. Oh, I'm going to say this anyway. I do wonder about Gastineau's mental state because in the moment that it happened, he certainly didn't seem to have any issues with it. And maybe he was smart enough to understand that there were cameras on him everywhere, right? I mean, he's hugging. There's video of hugging Strahan, congratulating him, all that stuff. But clearly, at years later, it bothers him. And he put together an incredible 22.5 sacks, 22 sacks. But you know what? Any record, and I truly believe this, you set any record in the NFL in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, or frankly, even today, the idea that it's never going to get broken is just silly. And I know Gastineau thought that it would get broken at some point, but he didn't want it that way. But does it really matter? Does it matter how it was broken if it was broken? I guess that's my question. It was going to get broken at some point. No record stands forever. It stood for 20 years almost. More than that, 84, 90, no, 50, no, less than that, sorry, 18 years. I mean, it was going to be broken at some point, right? And so the way that it's broken obviously bothers him. But to think that records are not going to fall, I think is just silly and short-sighted.
The only record I see when I look at the sack leaders, Dave, today in terms of all time, not just single season, Bruce Smith with 200. I don't know if I see that getting broken.
Really?
I really don't. There's a lot of different, you know, types of stats that are out there. But when you look at it, so the next one behind was Reggie White, you know, the Minister of Defense.
The Minister of Defense.
198. The next one is Kevin Green with 160. It shows you what Bruce Smith really did accomplish, right? I mean, he's 40 sacks in front of Kevin Green, who's number three, and then it starts to drop even further and further and further. So
yeah,
there are some that are still playing. Von Miller's one, who's got a heck of a nice career with sacks, but it's a long ways from 200.
And even he's not even close, yeah.
Right. So when you look at some of these things, that's one that's going to take a while, and I don't know when or if. But like you said, I think the reality of it all really is every one of these records is out there to be beat. And at some point, somebody will get there. But it's now about longevity and all the rest of it to be able to get anywhere close to where Bruce Smith is. And he, by the way, you know where Bruce Smith went to college? Virginia Tech. Golden Gophers going to be playing him.
Yeah.
In our
it is interesting because you look at that list of the top 20, and there's only one active guy on it, and he's not even close.
Yeah.
He's 17th. But when you think about, like, Bruce Smith, that defense that he played on in Buffalo was chock full of stars.
Yep.
Right? I mean, really great players that basically you had to pick your poison. Were you going to try to pass? Were you going to try to run with the linebackers they had? Or were you going to, you know, good luck, you're just going to get sacked by Bruce Smith if you try to drop back? And I don't think in this free – we're going down another path here, but I don't think in this era of free agency that you would ever be able to put together some of these defenses again. The defense that Kevin Green played on in Pittsburgh, you know, he was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pick your poison because Greg Lloyd was on the other side. Like, well, okay – I guess one of you is going to kill me. I'll just take you instead.
And I think that's the one thing that holds it back to my point earlier about 200 sacks and, wow, can anybody get there? The restriction's going to be, well, can you pay? You're going to have essentially almost four players that are practically all pro to be able to get enough sacks in a time frame to be able to get there. And so, you know, as you said, there's only one present player in there right now. Well, when you consider all the money and everything else that goes into it, are teams going to be able to afford enough of those kinds of players that is going to get one of those guys the ability to get those kind of sacks? So that's what makes this so intriguing, I think, right now, is Bruce Smith sitting up there with Reggie White behind him, who's long been gone. It's just amazing. It's an amazing
also
number. Yeah.
I'll say this, too, and we're going to open up Pandora's box, but whatever. Also, you can't touch the quarterback anymore.
Right.
How many of Bruce Smith's 200 sacks would have been called back because it was a late hit or he drove the quarterback to the ground?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I've not watched them all, but I bet a lot of them. You cannot hit quarterbacks anymore in today's game. So that might be, Pete, out of all of this, that might be the biggest reason why we'll never see 200 sacks again.
Yeah. No, you're right. And you know what? It's why I've always said, because of Lawrence Taylor, and I think you could throw Bruce Smith into this category too, because of those guys and they were around at the same era, because they were able to get around that corner so fast, it created something with tackles in football on the offensive side. And so, you know, that is amped up from where it once was. These offensive tackles now are bigger, stronger, faster, all those things to be able to protect their quarterbacks as best they can. So it's a different, you know, I've always said that Lawrence Taylor should get a piece of every contract of every left tackle ever to come into from college to the NFL, because he created what they are going to have to be able to do with what he can do and what he did. It's created something where those left tackles get paid a lot of money, and I think that really Lawrence Taylor really should get a piece of every one of those contracts, because he's the guy who made that such a piece that everybody's got a left tackle who's quote unquote all pro.
Last word comes from the stylesfinancial.com talking text line on this one, and I don't disagree. Jim Marshall has more of a beef for not getting in the Hall of Fame than Gastineau, and I have no skin in the game, was too young and not born to see either Saul and Blaine. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that, do you?
No, not at all. Jim Marshall
100%.
Was amazing. Longevity,
yep, 100%.
Too. 100%. Yep.
All right, we'll take a quick break, come back, talk a little Wild hockey. They're the best team in the NHL right now. We'll talk about it coming up next. Oh, that's such a great goal song. The Minnesota Wild are on, for the most part, fire. 20 wins, 6 losses, 4 overtime losses. 44 points right now, second in the Central. Jesse Pierce, Bar Down Beauties podcast at NHL.com, joining us this morning. Jesse on the Styles Financial Tech. No, it's not the tech. Which one? It's you're on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. Sorry, wrong line. If you call us, you're on that one. If we call you, you're on this one. So, Jesse, I have to admit, after that really tough loss to Edmonton, I thought, this could be a bad turning point. How much was it a focus of the team to say, we're just going to put that back and move forward as they came out and kind of took it to the Flyers yesterday?
I mean, it was a top priority. I think in the post-game conversations with players and with Coach John Hines, they had mentioned how uncharacteristic it was of them. I mean, this team, there's a different vibe around them, and there's a different feeling, even when they're dealing with constant injuries. You know, you get Matt Zuccarello and Jonas Brodin back, but you're still without Eck, and you're losing Jacob Lauko. It just still has a different feeling from last year, whereas last year it felt like they weren't prepared to handle that adversary, and they weren't prepared to dig into the depth and fill in some of those holes, where this year they really are. So I think for them, they looked at that loss to Edmonton, which is going to happen throughout the course of an 82-game season. Hopefully not very often, but, I mean, Edmonton's playing incredibly well right now. They just put on a show against Vegas as well, winning 6-3 last night, that you knew that Minnesota was going to bounce back, and they did. You know, Philadelphia is having its own struggles, so to kind of come out and dominate against a team like that was imperative just to get things on the right track. Now, it's another big test tonight against Vegas, but as I mentioned, I don't think you're going to see too many of those 7-1 downings throughout the season.
Well, certainly when you look at what we've done between the pipes, we've been absolutely outstanding, but that was one of those games that just wasn't the right game. But you just mentioned it, 82 games, they've got to be resilient, right? They've got to be able to bounce back. Is that something that the coach has been stressing to the players? Are they feeling that it's just a long season, but they are doing things the right way? They're going to have a bump in the road here and there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think any good head coach will tell you that, right? I mean, you take each game as it is, even if you're in the midst of a winning streak, even if you're in the midst of a losing streak, you have to take each game fresh. You have to not really look back. And even for that one, John Hines said they didn't even really review video because they knew that was not their team. That was not a team that it was going to help them grow or learn anything just because they didn't play the way that they have been playing all season. I think what's really made this season different is John Hines is very focused on the little details and the little aspects. Yes, you want to look at the overall picture and your overall performance in a game, but really it's those minor details, the little things that maybe you can improve on or the little things that you've done well and you want to continue to build on. And I think that's making a world of a difference for Minnesota this year.
Jesse Pierce joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Jesse, I want to ask you about Matt Zuccarello, who was back in the lineup last night, and I know he had a great quote about his injury. I have been in front of the net twice. Once I got hit in my head, and I was in the hospital for a long time, and now I got hit in my nuts. So that's why I stay on the perimeter. This was arguably one of the most cringeworthy and just out-of-the-ordinary injuries, I think, in all of my years of playing and covering hockey I'd ever heard. Did you talk to him after the game or this week? And what does he have to say other than the fact that he's probably not going to try to screen too many shots in front of a goalie anymore?
I mean, Matt Zuccarello is so self-deprecating as is. He's very funny sometimes when he wants to be. So we kind of knew that this was going to be a good conversation. Also, out of respect, myself and colleague Sarah McClellan let the gentleman of the media handle this conversation a little bit
gosh.
More. Just to kind of
I don't even think I could ask the question. I mean,
yeah.
Every time I saw the video or heard about it, I mean, every guy in the room would go, oh, man, that's just not okay.
Exactly. No, I mean, it's so great to have Zuki back, not only just on the ice, but he's been around the team throughout the course of this injury. But I think Marcus Foligno had jokingly said post-game, too, about how Kirill was like a kid on Christmas Day learning that Matt Zuccarello was back in the lineup. So, I mean, just to uplift there, you feel bad for Zuki. I saw his wife and two kiddos before the game, too. They looked happy to have him back and healthy. And just a tough, tough injury. You poor guys, I'm sure, all felt that around the world when you heard about it. So good to see him back. But, yeah, I mean, at least you get a character quote out of it as well.
Probably his last two kids also, I might add, who were at the game. Go ahead, Pete.
Right, exactly.
Thank you.
Jesse, how about the throwback? I always love it, and the fact that they went with the throwback sweaters against Philly, it's something I think that's always special for those of us old enough to remember the North Stars and all the rest of it. But was that something that the players really enjoy to do as well?
So I think they know how much the fans love those colors, right? Like, it's not any disrespect to the Minnesota Wild and the organization as it sits, but there's something so sharp about that yellow and that green and that white. Like, it just, it really pops on the ice, and I'm sure there's a stat out there. I've been meaning to compile the numbers, but I do think they're more successful in those jerseys, and I think if you look around with the fans, those jerseys are far more prominent than anything else you'll ever see. So I think everybody kind of gets up for it. It's kind of fun. I still think it was funny that they wore them playing the Dallas Stars a couple weeks back. The game did not turn out so well for Minnesota. I remember Jason Robertson kind of chirping about that, in fact, in the locker room that day. But yeah, I mean, I love it. I think they look great, and it gives you that extra vibe because you know the fans are so into it too.
Jesse, my last one for you is a big one, and it's difficult, but I want you to answer this for me if you could, because I feel like through the first month and change of the season, everybody thought, okay, the Wild are going to come back to earth here eventually, and they're not. I mean, simply, they're just playing great hockey. What is the difference? What's different this year in a group that's basically almost all the same as it was last year? What do you see that's different in this team?
Philip Gustafson, it has to start there. I mean, that was the difference last year. Philip Gustafson was looked to have the same opportunity and the same role he's having right now. But unfortunately, he didn't rise to that occasion. Certainly, there was an injury that I think he never really fully came back from. And I don't know that he had the focus. I think this year he took it very, very seriously when he went into the offseason, knowing kind of how his name was very heavily circulated in the trade rumors and knowing how disappointed everybody really was in his performance. So I think he took that to heart and came back in with a chip on his shoulder. And I think that's a huge difference. And when you see his confidence get back, the entire team can kind of rally around that. And certainly you've got Jared Spurgeon, your captain, back in the lineup, and he's been playing well even since his little setback with his injury. I mean, like I said, it's just a different positive feeling, and they're winning in different ways and in different situations. You know, I think last year it was a lot of, okay, we'll turn the gas on toward the end of the game and maybe force overtime, and okay, we got a point, that's good enough. Whereas this year, they really pick themselves up anytime they need to, and they change things. I think John Hines is a very good reactionary coach to mix lines up and really alter things if they're not working, and I think that's something we haven't seen, because it's funny, Dave, it's the same roster as last year, and yet it's night and day, really, when you look at it. And again, health certainly plays a factor, but in general, there's more confidence that they have what it takes to oversee any challenges in their way, and it's just an exciting team to watch this year.
The Las Vegas Golden Knights come to town today. I believe it's a 1 o'clock puck drop over at the XL Energy Center. Jesse Pierce, is it 5? Thank you.
It's 5. You're welcome. Just don't know.
You think
show
I know
up
this?
1 o'clock. That's a little early.
Don't show up at 1. The gates don't open until 3. They wouldn't try to compete with NFL football. 5 o'clock's much better. Thanks, Jesse.
Thanks, Jesse.
No problem, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Jesse Pierce, Bar Down Beauties podcast, NHL.com. Always great insight with her. We'll take a break now that I've gotten the game time correct and come back other side. We will chat about Bill Belichick. Why is he going to UNC, and why does everyone think he's going to fail? I don't think he is. I'll talk about it next. Forever young.
That's just awesome.
Bill Belichick will be forever young, I guess. He's the new head coach at the University of North Carolina. Announced this week. Funny, because we talked about it last week that he was probably going to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. I thought it might be Ohio State. This is I see no downside in this for either party. Some people are waiting for his demise very quickly, saying, oh, well, he can't do this at the college game. But I got to be honest, football's football, and he knows how to win. And he knows how to get guys ready for the next level. Mm-hmm. And the last I checked, two things that were really interested, that recruits were really interested in, was winning games and getting to the next level. This is a win-win. What a great move by North Carolina. They go from having one of the best college coaches of the early 2000s, Mack Brown, to one of the best NFL coaches of the mid-2000s in Bill Belichick. And a guy who, frankly, knows how to run football as a business, and that's exactly what it is now, Pete.
What I think makes Bill Belichick the right guy right now for college football and North Carolina, the Tar Heels, is exactly everything that's going on in college sports that we talk about all the time. It's NIL, right? And if you don't think North Carolina's NIL has jumped significantly from the moment that they announced that Belichick is becoming the coach, you'd be wrong, because this is going to be huge, I think. And I think it gives them an opportunity. Does it mean they're going to be great right away? No, but these days it doesn't take all that long either,
matter.
Dave. You can make a turn pretty fast. If you can get the right quarterback that jumped into the portal. So all of this, I think, really speaks to everything that makes Bill Belichick a great coach, which is, he's got a handle on free agency, which we call the portal. He's got a handle on NIL, which, you know, and by the way, in the NFL, the problem is you've got a cap. There is no cap still for the money that they're able to offer some of these players to come to the University of North Carolina. That's a big deal. And then when you consider the fact that he's bringing with him, he's getting $10 million as the coach, right? He's also bringing a guy who's going to be their general manager, like we're seeing more and more in college sports, but specifically college football. He's going to get a minimum of $1.5 million. Then there's all the rest of those that are coming along with him that is going to change what North Carolina football has looked like, I think, very, very rapidly. And I wouldn't even be totally shocked, Dave, if it happened even as early as this year. Because when we played against North Carolina this year with the Gophers, and I was at that game, standing on the sidelines, looking at some of the athletes that they've got, they've got some great-looking athletes. They've got some great-looking players. Now, that all being said, they need more, and they need it at certain positions. And I think that Belichick will do a great job of positioning themselves into where they are, the conference that they are, and what are the pieces of the puzzle that they're missing right now. And it could be something, I think, really, really special, where there's a pretty rapid turn. It might not be this first year, but let's also note it's a 6-6 football team. That's not terrible. They're not 2-9 or something like that. It's a football team that's actually not so bad. And we'll see how they can compete at the next level with this guy as their coach, because I think that's going to be something really interesting. Even though last week I was talking about the fact that one of the problems with Belichick is when you look at what his record looked like with and without Tom Brady, it's night and day, right? So he's going to have to do something without Tom Brady, but maybe he can find a quarterback that is something in the world of college that could be Brady-esque.
Well, hot take here. He doesn't even need to win to be successful. And I'll explain this, because in college football now, it's about national TV games. It's about eyes on the program and buzz around the program and getting guys to play at the next level. You can do that without winning games. Look at Deion Sanders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Colorado's value as a college franchise, as a college team, hasn't been this high since Rashan Salaam played for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not winning division championships. They are sending guys to the NFL, and everyone's talking about Colorado. This is going to be the same thing in North Carolina. They'll win because they probably can win some games there, and I think Belichick's probably a better coach than Deion Sanders. He's got the acumen for it. But he doesn't have to win. He has to get a couple really good players. Everyone's going to be that. How many games did North Carolina have on ESPN last year? I don't know. Probably not many. Mm-hmm. My guess is they will have a lot more this year.
And they're going to fill the stadium.
Yeah.
The stadium right
Belichick.
Now. Belichick. Their stadium, just so we're up to date on that too, it holds 63,000. They only put in about 50 on average.
College game day will be at North Carolina this year.
Oh, yes.
I would be my guess. I'm just saying, you don't have to win to be successful. You just have to bring in money for your school. Mm-hmm. And Belichick means dollars and cents.
Yep.
And so I just, this is a win-win for everybody. He could honestly go zero wins in his first season, and they'll still be the most talked about zero-win team in all of college football.
On that note, though, you did talk about Deion.
Yes.
I did read an article that talked about his buyout. It's relatively cheap. He negotiated a buyout that drops from $10 million to $1 million on June 1st of next year. Do we think maybe that this is kind of similar to the Deion, you know, buzz around, you know, going college and then going back to pro? Do we think maybe that he has something to prove to NFL GMs around the league saying, hey,
no,
I could still coach a football team to success and I could still turn a program around at the age and at the level that I'm at?
I don't think so. Okay. Deion Sanders has done nothing for me to prove that he is successful enough to warrant
and that's why I don't see him jumping ship to the NFL. He's staying put in Colorado.
Football, you have to garner buzz.
Yeah.
You don't have to have that in the NFL. You just got to, in the words of Al Davis, you just got to win, baby. Right? And there are so many better college coaches that I think come with less of, frankly, less of a headache and less of a price tag than Deion would.
I mean, to be fair, though, and Pete and I actually talked about this in the break. We might see Mike McCarthy get re-signed as like the big magic move to be made this offseason with the NFL. I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Jones still retains his assets that is Mike McCarthy at the helm for the Cowboys, which, by the way, not doing much winning this year on their end.
That's a problem.
No, and there's just so many other good options out there. You'd go to Deion, I think. I mean, I could see him maybe going to.
It's a different game,
program.
Like you said. Though it's a completely different beast going from, you know, coaching in Boulder to the main stage of the NFL. And there's a difference between Deion being a player and being a coach. It doesn't always convert from one to the other.
Yeah,
failing to realize when they, you know, create this buzz that Deion is he's going to leave the football program in Colorado and jump ship to coach the Cowboys. Deion Sanders couldn't save what that program is going through right now in Dallas. I promise you that he is not the savior that they need.
The one thing, though, Dave, that is something that I think is a consideration is it does sometimes come down to age, right? And I'm not trying to say Bill Belichick is too old to do the job, because I don't think he is, but does he translate well to the ball players that are coming there, the 18-year-olds? And that's because Deion can do it. We all
Deion
know that.
Does.
He's
yeah,
got
that's
the
a
flash.
Good point.
He's got all that. But
that's
with Bill Belichick,
point.
Think about it. I mean, it's been a little while now.
I think
a great point,
I think we're on the verge of seeing a lot of people wearing sleeveless hoodies around America. The sleeveless hoodie era is upon us now that Bill Belichick is in Chapel Bill, as they've been calling him in the media this week. He's Chapel Bill.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh,
yeah.
Chapel Bill. That's a good point, though. Can he relate to today's players?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if he makes them better, is he going to earn their respect or is he just going to demand it? I think the name still does it. I think regardless of how he coaches, the name is what garners the respect. But I could very much see a situation where a really good player or crop of good players comes in, plays a couple years, and is like, I'd rather go play for someone else. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, and we won't know until we know. Obviously, we're going to be watching what he does with the portal, what he does with NIL, which I got to tell you guys, I mean, whatever the number was last year, I would say it's double. And I would say it's very close to a $20 million number at North Carolina, just that fast. Because let's be honest, this is a university that's a basketball school. It's known as a basketball school, but they've got the money. They have the support that they will need from a financial standpoint that they haven't had before, I think. Even with Mack Brown, they just didn't have the money.
No, they didn't. Well, it's certainly interesting. I mean, again, I'll be watching UNC this year, and I guarantee everyone else will too. Yep. Just like Colorado, those first few games with Deion Sanders. So let's take a quick break. We've got a number of texts here on the talking text line, so we'll get to those coming up next. You're listening to The Huddle. Everybody needs to relax about the Gopher men's hockey team.
Good
okay,
night.
It's gonna be okay.
It's gonna be okay.
They lost to the third-ranked Michigan State team in the country. Okay, and Josh, you and I were talking about this on air. First of all, they're 15-3. They're 7-1-2 at home. Okay, you have to learn how to play in close games. They haven't had a lot of those close games this year. They're beating St. Thomas 7-1. They're putting up 7 goals on Duluth. They're beating Penn State, the 18th ranked team in the country, 3-1 rather, and then 1-0. They beat Wisconsin. They played them in overtime. They need to me, what I saw out of that game, Josh, is when they have a lead and then Michigan State comes back, they tie them Friday and they lose 5-3. To me, that screams we're not really great yet at playing in these super close, tight games with a really good opponent. I think everyone needs to.
You know what, Dave? The Gophers crumbling yesterday. I have to give it one of these.
Well done.
Well done.
That's why you wanted to talk about this.
I want to celebrate that. By the way, a school that Minnesota seems to avoid on the schedule over the last year. It was something seeing the collapse happen so quickly yesterday. It was just a boom, 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 and Michigan State was already up on them. And it was not a great weekend for Motzko and his crew.
He's smiling ear to ear right now.
Oh, I love it.
He loves it.
I've never seen anything like it. Yeah. Here's the thing.
You've never seen him smile.
It isn't.
Not
yeah,
like this.
That's true, except when Oklahoma wins. But I will say this.
Not much.
The interesting part about this is that the fans, I think, in some ways, to your point of what you were talking about, Dave, is the fans, some of them are talking like, we just lost to St. Olaf. Michigan State is not
a bad team.
Hockey team, right?
No, they're a very good team.
Let's be honest. Give them credit, too. I mean,
you're the hockey experts, Mr. Pete Najarian.
I can throw it down. I was a defensiveman for a while.
Defensiveman? Yeah. Listen to you.
Yeah, I played defense. Yeah.
Oh, boy. We should do a whole other hour of the show just talking hockey.
Michigan State's legit.
What movie did Josh not see this weekend?
We definitely showed.
Which movie did I didn't I see? Is
he didn't watch any of them?
No. Yeah. The guy. Yeah.
I was too busy watching paint dry. I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Sakes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know.
When Dave, you're, you
okay.
See
so which one are you going to watch for next Sunday?
Yeah. I don't know. Is there any? Are any?
What are you
going to
watch next Sunday?
How about Rocky IV?
I'll jump from Rocky 1 to 4. Let's do that. Yeah.
Well, it's not like the plot's too hard to follow in each movie, so you could conceivably jump right to 4. It'd be fine.
Let's see.
Come on.
Back to I don't want to have to buy a movie. I want to be able to stream it or find it like on a Netflix or an Amazon or something. That's the unfortunate part is DVDs aren't really a thing anymore.
Okay. Let's start with Field of Dreams. Have you watched?
Yeah.
Watch Field of Dreams?
Right. Yeah.
Good.
Field of Dreams. Yeah. Have you watched Slapshot?
Bits and pieces.
Have you watched?
Remember the Titans.
Have you watched?
It's okay.
That's a good one too. It's okay. You know what we need to do? Next week at the beginning of the show, we're going to ask people what movies Josh should watch.
And then we'll bonus points if you invite me to your house and bring pizza.
Well, if you'll bring pizza, I mean, I'm in.
I got a series for him. He's got if he hasn't done it already. How about the Tulsa King?
Oh, that's such a good show.
You're such a hick.
What?
No, it's a great show. Sylvester Stallone is outstanding in that
show.
Pete's
in here doing the Lindahl right now with his arms wide open. Yeah.
You don't understand. Like, you will once you see Rocky. But yep. Sylvester Stallone was 100% typecast as just Rocky and Predator.
Yep.
True.
Right? Rambo, excuse me, not Predator.
He also doesn't own the properties. They won't let him own the properties for those movies, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's why
he's still working. But he really is a completely different character in Tulsa King, which is a phenomenal program. So good, Pete.
I love it.
So good.
I just started it. I started it on an airplane the other day when I was flying back here. And I'll tell you what, I got through
it
was great.
It's great. It's great. It's great. All right. We're out of time for today. Let's do this again next Sunday. Have a good week, gentlemen. Enjoyed it.